This episode of Fire Engineering Podcast is sponsored by LogRx, providing real-time accountability of all your narcotics from cradle to grave. Coming soon, LogRx will also track medical supplies, equipment, PPE, and even vehicle checks. Learn a better way to track your narcotics at LogRx.com. That's LogRx.com.
Like a trusted turnout jacket you've had for years, Flex 7 outer shell fabric delivers a perfectly broken-in feel on the very first wear. Flexible, comfortable, and powered with the strength of Enforce technology, Flex 7 outer shell fabric is made to move. To learn more, visit TenkataFabrics.com/Flex7. Flex 7, powered by Enforce technology. Only from Tenkata Protective Fabrics.
All right, welcome everybody. This is Eric Dryman for the Hooks and Hoses podcast. I want to welcome everybody to the July edition of the podcast. I hope everyone's having a good summer and had a good 4th of July. Pretty excited this month. I've got two guests coming on. Lee Hubbard, the executive director of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, and Brian Zeitz, the current president of the ISFSI. So, Lee and Brian, welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, happy to have you here. Lee, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, your background, how you ended up at ISFSI, and your thoughts on ISFSI as far as what you've been able to accomplish during your tenure with them.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And I'm excited to see how many times we can say ISFSI in a 1 hour time span and get it right. It's a mouthful for sure. Yeah. We actually have a button back from back in the 70s, and it says, can't say it, spell it. Thanks for having us. I am Lee Hubbard. I'm the executive director of ISFSI. I've been with ISFSI. This is my 15th year. So how did I get here? I got here because 15 years ago, ISFSI was kind of restructuring and looking at how it could become more relevant, not only in the American Fire Service, but globally. And they had a fantastic president at the time, Eddie Buchanan out of Hanover, Virginia. And Eddie and I knew each other, living in close proximity. And we sat down and chatted, and he said, you know, we just need a little bit of something different. And so we kind of came up with a plan, went through a strategic facilitation, and I had great resources in the historical perspective of the organization and some people who really believed in the mission and vision of the organization and were ready to kind of recraft that and rebrand that. And just a fresh set of eyes was what they needed. And so 15 years later, here's where we are. We've come a long way in 15 years. You know, there's going to be people on this podcast, Eric, who remember ISFSI from their being a publisher, being a bookstore of textbook and leadership books and curriculum. They're going to remember ISFSI as being the founding entity of FDIC back in the 70s and it being there in Cincinnati and, you know, being in Memphis. And then they're going to remember ISFSI going through a couple bad years of hiccups. And then you're going to have people on this podcast that are going to remember ISFSI where it is now, which is the principles of modern fire tech, being progressive in our relationship with science and research, being a member-centric organization in that we're really focused on instructor professional development, and investing a lot of time and energy in that realm of the fire service, and you know, being active in getting quality content out there for our members and well beyond. And so that's where we are.
Yeah, certainly there's a lot going on with ISFSI. I can vouch for that. You know, I've been involved with the organization for probably 8 years, 10 years now. So in the grand scheme of things, I'm a newcomer to the program, but certainly I've been around it long enough, had taken some of the classes and taken advantage of the resources that the memberships provide. So I can certainly vouch for the quality of the material and how much of a benefit it is for the American Fire Service. Brian, tell us a little about yourself and how you came to be involved with ISFSI and how you've managed to climb to the top of the organization. Now currently you're serving as president.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So I started with ISFSI. I was at the FDIC, like most people go FDIC, and they had at the time, there was a social going on at the, I think it was the Eagle's Nest, and I probably say that wrong. Maybe it was. Someone said, hey, you know, you do training, you ought to go to this, this event. And as I tried to get in for free, I got stopped by Lee, who told me, she's like, this is a members only, you have to join. So I said, oh, okay, whatever I got to do. So, of course, pulled the credit card and joined, which was a blessing in disguise. I really didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I'm like, yeah, whatever, let's just do this thing. Somebody else, typical, right? Like, hey, it's the cover fee to get into the bar, and all my buddies were up there. So I was like, well, I got to go where my buddies are at. And so I get up to this event and I look around and it's, people that I was just, prominent names in the fire service that were iconic people. And I'm looking around and they're just having casual conversations with everybody. And I was able to walk up and talk to these people that I'd always looked up to in the fire service. And so it was at that point, I was realized like, this is a pretty impressive society, organization. And I was just excited at the time, of course, to be, a new member, right? A 10-minute member. And so so then things fast forward, I got asked to instruct at their fall conference. And so I did that and then had some conversations with the board and they're like, hey, have you ever thought about running for a board seat? And at the time, I was doing my own thing in my career at the fire service where I'm at. And so it really wasn't anything on my radar. So I was like, well, sure, let's, put my name in the hat. A no name, nobody's going to get, two votes compared to, this other person. And so somehow I end up winning a board seat and sort of the rest is history, right? So you just kind of got involved. And so I think the thing I really like the most about the ISFSI is what Lee said, it's a member-centric organization. And when people ask me like, hey, why should I join ISFSI or, what do I get out of it? And I always tell people, you get out what you put into it. It's just like the fire service, right? So, I've been in the fire service 24 years now. And when I started as a new firefighter, the things I'm doing now were never on my radar, right? I never thought one podcast didn't exist. So it wasn't something I was going to be doing. I didn't think like, oh, someday I want to write an article or someday I wanted to, all I really wanted to do was go on fires and ride backwards on a fire truck and just do the job of being a firefighter. And, I tell people when you put yourself out there, just like in the organization of ISFSI, if you get yourself involved and put yourself out there, the opportunities are endless. And so that's the thing I think about ISFSI is it can open doors. And that's, I think, the biggest thing that we do for our members is, we open doors and create relationships with people that really fully allow them to expose themselves to what the fire service can do for them and what contributions they in turn can provide to the fire service. And so making it a better organization, better fire service for the world. So that's what I'm excited about. How I got elected president, I think there was a glitch in the system and I was able to vote and no one else was able to vote for the system. So we got one vote for me and the other candidate. It's an incredible opportunity. We've already hit the ground running at FDIC and had several meetings already with a lot of organizations. And so we're really moving forward and we'll talk about some of our programs, I'm sure, through this podcast and what we're doing. And hopefully by the end, those that are listening that aren't members, are really inclined to maybe say, hey, listen, I think that really would benefit me, benefit my career, benefit my organization. And so, not that this is a sales pitch for an hour, but maybe, take back and look and say, hey, you know what, that would benefit my department if I had access to that, or maybe that program would be a good fit for this because we've been kind of having that void in our organization, or wow, I didn't know that was even an opportunity for me to do so. But I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to this next hour or so and talking with everybody about ISFSI.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. I think it's important as we move on. ISFSI is a member-centric organization. It's overseen and directed and, guided by the membership, right? The not only yourself as the president, but the board of directors are all firefighters from all over the country. So there's a broad representation from career, volunteer, rural, metropolitan, urban, suburban, all those different types and sizes of organizations. So as you said, and as both of you have said, you know, there's something in it for everyone. I wish that I would have been exposed to it long before I finally was. I started to get out and do some training and get some exposure and travel around. And I think I first met Lee out in California at a conference, and then we met a few other places. And now, obviously, when I see you folks at FDIC, it's nice to see you again, because it's something like we don't get to see each other as much, but it is a member centric organization. It's run and guided by the members. The members write the articles. The members help develop a lot of the curriculum and that sort of thing. So I think it's important. You know, it's not just a bunch of people sitting in a stuffy conference room or all sitting in cubicles in a building somewhere developing curriculum and programs and things like that. It's actually the people that are out on the street making the runs and making those decisions and doing the research and that sort of stuff. So as we move into...
Can I just mention one quick thing on that? You know, you're talking about how, like, you know, 8 years when you went into training, and that's the cool thing about ISFSI is that when people are sitting here listening, they're going, what does Hooks and Hoses have to do with training? And why is ISFSI a guest on Hooks and Hoses? And I would say that ISFSI is changing the poster child of what an instructor is, right? So how many times in your department or in neighboring departments have you heard the story of he was sent or she was sent to training because of being punished or being challenged because of a decision they made in operations? And I would say that ISFSI, we're here to tell you that if you don't think you're an instructor, you're wrong. If you're in the fire service, you're an instructor. Every single person you talk to, every peer you have a conversation with, you're an instructor. You're sending them a message. You're teaching them about something, whether it be from an administrative level, a leadership message, or talking about budget or strategic planning, or you're in operations and you're sitting at the kitchen table and you're having a tabletop, you know, run of a local box store, whatever the case may be, or you're physically in the academy and you're teaching every single day, you're an instructor. And so to your point, Eric, you know, we're here because Hooks and Hoses, who typically has conversations about tactics and training tactics and those types of things, we're here because every single person that's listening right now is an instructor in some capacity in the fire service, and we want to support you. And we need to hear from you. We need to know what your challenges are. We need to know what you're hearing on the streets. Where are you reaching your maximum capacity in terms of your messaging and getting information out there? And so I think it's a really important, and we appreciate the fact that you're thinking outside of the box in terms of your guests on your podcast.
Yeah, well, thank you. I like to, you know, expose people to as many different things as I can. And I think this is important because we can talk about training. We can talk about delivering a message or learning something. But there's a lot of people in the fire service who I think aspire or would like to think that, you know, they want to do more, but they don't know how to. Right. So that's one nice thing about the organization is that there are so many resources available to us as members, right, that can help guide you. And whether it's a mentorship from someone as like either one of you, or it's somebody else that you connect with in the organization, to resources, to training material that's on the website and programs that are delivered, and, you know, the other online trainings that take place. There's just a lot there. So, talking about the different programs and resources that are available, and one, I do want to hit on the science part of it because I think that's important. And although it's not brand new in the American Fire Service, you know, it's certainly been in the last 15 years or so that science has become such a heavy heavy component of what we do. And the way we look at the job is definitely different than the way we looked at it, I know, when I first got into the fire service. So what are all the different types of programs and different opportunities that people can take advantage of through the organization?
Brian, you want me to kick it off or you want to kick it off?
Well, so I would say, you know, the biggest, I'll let Lee go into the actual formal programs because she knows those, because she actually does those every day, make sure that we have those classes filled and things like that. But in the informal world of it is, you know, I always tell the story of, you know, we had a training officer, and I always remember this. He was a new lieutenant. He got promoted. His department had some internal issues, whatever. And he got promoted to training officer in his organization. And he reached out to ISFSI, and he was, you know, essentially felt like he was drowning in this environment of this new training officer. They got a new chief coming in, and he had no idea. And I think a lot of people take the training role or the instructor role, and they think, well, I just teach a class. So if you're the training officer, and you guys know, it's so much more than the instructional aspect of it. There's so many things beyond just teaching the class. There's the setup, the evaluation, all those things, plus all the documentation, plus all the things you're required to do. And so this, you know, gentleman reached out, he joined ISFSI, and he's like, hey, I'm joining because I just don't even know where to start. And within like a week, he had, you know, a whole year's training plan. He had contacts of who to call, you know, for resources. He felt more at ease in this new role because of the, you know, mentorship, informal mentorship at the time, that we didn't have a formal mentorship like we do now. But he felt more at ease with the role that he was taking on because he had support. And so I think that's a huge thing that the ISFSI offers. I just did a company officer class in the St. Louis region, and it wasn't like a fire officer class. It was just a 3-day, like, boots on the ground, let's get to be better company officers. And I reached out to, you know, several members, and I said, hey, what resources do you have for, you know, company level drills? And, you know, I think I sent an email out to 6 people. Within a day and a half, I had 300 company level drills. I had enough drills to last the next 5 years with just a simple email. And I think, you know, that's the thing, right? Like, that's what the ISFSI can do, is it's those members that are driven in the fire service. I don't, you know, we have almost 2,000 members in ISFSI. And I can tell you that I don't know of any of them that are sitting back and kicking easy in the fire service. They're all driven. They're all doing things. They're all motivated, and they're all making the fire service better. And that's a hard thing to say for every organization. And so from my perspective, you know, we have a lot of formal programs. Lee will talk about our 1403 program and our mentorship program and our training officer, I'm sure, and the new 1400 and all those other programs we have. But for the person that's just joining, you know, we offer that support system. Like Lee was talking about, as an instructor, everybody in the fire service is an instructor. The newest person coming on the job, mentoring that new firefighter coming in, the formal officer, the company officer is the instructor, the training officer, the fire chief, all those things, everybody's training. We offer you a support system to make the training relevant and really an effective program for your department, but also make you a better instructor to support. So, but Lee can talk about our actual formal programs and add on to that, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. As we'll talk about those formal programs, here in a little bit, because I definitely want to hit on those and then discuss some of the new things coming down the on the horizon for ISFSI, some of the new programs. So, just to kind of take it into a more general direction, although, you know, we're talking about the organization, but in general, what are some things, what are some challenges that the two of you have seen in your time, not only with the organization, but just in your careers, with how training has evolved, how training has gotten better, and maybe to a certain degree, are there some of the things that with technology and things like this podcast and online delivery and things like that have created challenges? What are some things that you think are have gotten better over the years, whether it's information that we get through research or the technology? And then at the same time, are there challenges that those things create for us that now we have to overcome a different challenge than we had to overcome 30 years ago?
Well, I would start by saying, you alluded to it, science. Science is the best thing that has happened to the fire service, in that we are educated on facts. And we have organizations that are just investing their time and their money into disseminating that education open source to the fire service. So you no longer have the challenge of I can't afford it, or I don't have access to it, or I mean, whatever the excuse may have been, it just doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, I would have to tip my hat to the groups like FSRI who are out there helping to get, literally, as their slogan says, science to the streets, right? So you're being educated on factual information. ISFSI has been blessed to have a great working relationship with organizations such as this to help develop more robust training in areas where we were seeing injuries, line of duty deaths. Example would be understanding and fighting basement fires. So, you know, special thanks to, you know, FEMA AFG for also recognizing that we needed to invest research, time, and energy into educating on some of these types of topics. So I would say science is the biggest thing. Beyond that, I think we all can agree that probably online education, right? And platforms that allow us continuing education. One of the things that we spoke about it was our mentorship program. You know, the use of a platform that allows our members, seasoned professionals who have great ability to connect with a different generation and or someone in the same generation who wants to improve upon a specific skill set. Maybe it's writing, maybe it's leadership, maybe it's strategic facilitation, maybe it's budget, or maybe it's just how to write curriculum, basic and, you know, from the ground up. But we have the ability to really connect the dots for these people. My favorite story is that's happening in a virtual online setting, which allows someone in Boston, Massachusetts to connect and build a relationship with someone in Washington State and come together face to face at FDIC to further that development of that relationship. And so, you know, I would say the online aspect, if used appropriately, is another great example of how training has come such a long ways.
I would agree. Brian, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, the last 15 or so years with the FSRI really making an impact in the fire service and training, I think technology has been a huge factor for us as well. I mean, I remember, you know, and I would still go to his class today if I could get in it. But, you know, I remember sitting on the edge of my seat in my former department when John Norman came to town to talk, because he literally talked for 8 hours on tactics. And, you know, and that's what you did, right? Like, you know, just you couldn't write fast enough of what he was saying about tactics. And today, because of technology, we're trying to drink out of a fire hose, for, you know, a hard term, right? And so you can't do, you know, no one's doing that. No one wants to listen to somebody for 8 hours because they'll just go, let's do a podcast. And so while the information is very valuable that's out there in a lot of these, you know, online technology platforms and things like that, I think to your point about, you know, when you do a lot of tactics talks on this podcast, I think we have to be careful in the fire service too, that we're not getting tactics by opinion. And so I think that's where ISFSI really, you know, differentiates, is that everything that we do in a training format is based on fundamental research that's been conducted and proven. And we're not just saying, hey, do this because we think it's kind of cool, or, you know, it worked once on a fire for us and somebody wrote an article about it and now they have, you know, a social media following or whatever. And so I think that's going to be that's probably the one thing I think is challenging now is that you get in a lot of tactics by opinions or fire service by opinion, and who has the biggest social media following versus, hey, who's really done the job? I mean, there was no doubt when John Norman was talking and he said, this is what you did. That's what you did. Mm-hmm. See, you know, through right. experience, it was proven. And I think a lot of people today are, you know, hey, do this, because, you know, one fire had last year said I could do this and it worked. And then now I'm an expert. It's like, let's caution that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It is it's a double-edged sword. I you know, the amount of information that's out there, as you said, you know, it's like drinking from a fire hose. And FSRI and is a perfect example. You go to their website and you look at all the programs that are available and you're like, where do I start? Right. So it's a good problem to have. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's not. I think that kind of as the both of you talked about, you know, there is so much information out there that sometimes you don't know where to start. So you need maybe that helping hand or maybe somebody to cut through some of the static for you and say, don't, you know, all this stuff's important, but here's what you really need to know and focus on this or do that, you know, and having those connections really helps with that. Leah, you brought up a good point, and I think it's important for the audience to understand when you mentioned the grants. A lot of the programs that are available are delivered at, you know, at little or no cost to the students as a result of the work that you're doing, you and the staff do behind the scenes to get these grants. Would you like to talk a little bit about that and how, you know, maybe you do or don't know off the top of your head, how many people you've been able to impact both directly and then secondarily and tertiarily, you know, through the delivery of these programs over the years?
Yeah, well, first of all, a huge shout out to the grants program and FEMA and the Assistance to Firefighters mm-hmm. grants who, and I'm sure your listeners know that we just received approval for reauthorization. So that funding will continue. And without that, I don't think we would be making the headway that we're making in the fire service. You know, ISFSI is blessed in that we are eligible to receive FPNS funds through the grant process. Our first grant that I was a part of was the Principles of Modern Fire Attack, essentially with just prior to that, the what we will term this, you know, kind of built upon that those Spartanburg burns. So if you guys remember the Spartanburg burns, which then developed into that Principles of Modern Fire Attack, and you want to talk about outreach, man, holy cow. I mean, that was unbelievable, right? I think there's a lot of people on this call who will probably tell you, like, they remember the good, the bad, the ugly with it. If you want to talk about changing the culture of the fire service, that grant, that delivery did it. In that first year delivery, it reached over like 16,000 firefighters. We also know that it changed the trajectory of curriculum that was by state. We have entire states that adopted the curriculum that came out of that. And so as far as an ROI, it went well beyond what we even envisioned that it would go. Building on that, you know, came understanding and fighting basement fires. It was not only a classroom delivery as a part of one grant, but then the addition of a hands-on training. You know, you can sit, as Brian alluded to, you got 8 hours of sitting in a classroom and, you know, now you're like licking windows at the end of it and your brain is going, bah, I can't take any more of this information. And then we realized how we could improve the delivery of that through a hands-on training where we're taking instructors and showing them how to implement this into their programs, into their training curriculum. And so there's understanding and fighting basement fires. There's NFPA 1700. There's our engine ops, which kind of built upon what FSRI was doing with their water mapping prop. And then currently in a period of performance for NFPA 1400, which is kind of a conglomeration of what everything you see in 1400 and developing quality content from a hands-on perspective of how do you get that into your department's daily training regimen. And so that's where we are right now.
All right. Excellent. So you mentioned some of the programs. You want to talk individually about the programs, the 1700 program, the 1403, either one of you, obviously, but, you know, any of those individual programs and what they encompass and how they were developed. You know, how did you identify the need for those programs? You know, what kind of process do you go through internally when you want to develop a new program or somebody comes and suggests a topic to maybe build on?
I wish I could I wish I could put you as a fly on the wall as a part of our internal process of going through if we're going to pursue a grant, and what does that process look like? It is can be entertaining on a year-to-year basis. Mm-hmm. But let's work backwards, because I think right now we're in the heat and the throes of our 1400 series program, and Brian really was kind of the brainchild behind that. And it was, you know, we're watching a lot of these standards change and evolve and develop. Yet once that happens, there's not really a mechanism by ensuring that departments are capable of changing their delivery methodology of those training components. So we wrote a grant for 1400 series, essentially goal with number one was that development of a comprehensive online learning that incorporated the key learning objectives of 1402, 1404, 1407, 810, and 1584. And then it ties all of that into your NFPA 1001 standard for professional firefighter qualifications. So that was kind of the pretense for an in-person delivery, which we're finding is very successful for us in delivery methodology. And we're just building a robust library of resources and training tools that use current adult learning methodology that would meet that, you know, knowledge base. Goal number two of this grant was to deliver the next skill set components through hands-on training. It has the look, vibe, and feel of a train the trainer. So those are your students are actually instructors in some capacity in their department. We don't quantify what an instructor is. So like Brian's not there looking at you and saying, well, you're a company officer, you're right in the front seat, you're not an instructor. That's not how we do business. If that individual wants to come and gain the knowledge, then we absolutely want them there. So that hands-on training takes each of those components in a small group setting, and we give them the tangible tools to train in their own departments. So it's kind of twofold. I'll let Brian talk a little bit more about why he thought that this was kind of an important grant and the delivery of this.
Yeah, so when we sat around and kind of were discussing this at the board level, and we had when we discuss these things, we actually ask for member input. So our members are actually involved in this as well. It's not just like the board sits around and says, hey, this is what we're going to do. It's a member, like I said, it's a member-driven organization, and our members are key, and it's important for us as a board to, you know, hear that. And so being that we're, you know, mostly fire instructors, training officers in the ISFSI, I looked at the NFPA 14. And so, you know, one of my roles here at the department I work for is the training officer. And if you read 1403 and 1404 and 07, 08 and 10, and you start looking at the language within there, there's a lot of shalls. And in the fire service, when it says you should do something, you're like, ah, okay. But when it says you shall have this or you shall do these things, and within that same language, it says that should be with the training officer. It seemed, you know, I looked at myself and my own department and said, man, you know, we really got to tighten some things up and make sure that we're complying, right? And not just so we check the boxes. But if this is what the standard is and this is what we should be doing and we've adopted that, then let's do that. And so I thought to myself, I'm like, well, why couldn't we put a program together that meets those standards and at least give everyone that comes to the class, if you come to the hands-on class, access to those things in a hands-on format. So you can actually walk through and see what, if I'm going to do a 1404 SCBA drill and a hands-on drill, how could I do that? How could I set that up in my department? How could I set up what would a 1407, you know, RIT drill look like, or an 08 TIC drill look like? What would that look like in my department? If I have a training tower, if I don't have a training tower, how can I still have an effective and efficient training, and meet that standard? And so that was kind of the hands-on aspect of it. And we all have seen 1410 drills. I mean, I think that's driven into our heads so hard, as instructors and training officers that we know those things. But again, looking at it from the department, a lot of places are like my department, you know, we share a training tower with another agency. So how can I accomplish these things if I'm not in a big urban fire department with a huge training complex or a training tower? Can I still do it? Well, the answer is yes. And so that's sort of what we tasked ourselves with, is saying, okay, how do we reach that? And, you know, with this grant, we reached out, we worked with the North American Fire Training Directors, the National Volunteer Fire Council. And so, you know, that was the hands-on. And then the other aspect of it is that, you know, we also know that there's a lot of back end paperwork that's needed on this, policies, procedures, you know, drills that need to be afforded to the student. And so then that's the online aspect that everyone has access to, is all that stuff that's on the back end. So, you know, whether you can come to class or not, you still have access to all that online format. So, you know, we're doing 25 regional deliveries. If, you know, unfortunately, if you can't get to one of those, you can still have access to the information and still make yourself a better instructor training officer through this grant, which I think is huge, right? I think, you know, when you look at those NFPA standards and what they mean to the instructor, what they mean to the organization, and then you throw in there the 1584 for health and rehab and where the fire service is at and cancer prevention, you know, healthy firefighters and what we can do for our fire service and, you know, what steps we can take on a training ground to make ourselves healthier. I think it's imperative. So I'm really, you know, Lee said, you know, it's kind of like my brainchild thing. You know, it's a collaborative effort with everybody, but I'm very excited to see this roll out because I think this program has been probably in the need for a while for the fire service. And I'm very hopeful that it meets that need for the fire service in the U.S.
And I have no doubt that it will. I think what I've experienced with a lot of these programs is, and both of you mentioned it, you know, and I'd be the first to admit, you know, when you start throwing out NFPA standards and numbers, I'd be lying if I said my eyes don't glaze over sometimes, right? Because it's so hard to keep track of all of them, right? But that's one thing that I really like about a lot of these programs is it, you know, it breaks it down so that you understand what those standards are if you're not familiar with them, and just exactly what they say. You know, it's, as you mentioned, Brian, there's a lot of shalls in there, right? So we when we talk about delivering training, we talk about things like, you know, different types of learners and the difference between the generations and how to deliver material and keep your students involved and flipping classrooms and all that sort of stuff that we're, you know, most instructors are probably familiar with in one form or another and understand. But it's also important, particularly for those folks who this is their full time, even if it's not their full time job, but certainly if it is their full time job and they're doing a lot of these trainings. It's important from a legal aspect, as much as nobody likes to talk about the legalities of this stuff, to make sure that you're not only making, you know, you're ensuring that your students are safe, but you're also covering your own rear end and you're also doing right by the organization that you represent, because, you know, any line of duty death is tragic, and we want to try and minimize those as much as possible. But I know just, you know, in the last 2 or 3 months, there's been a couple of instances where fire recruits have died, you know, in the academy. And when I read that in particular, partly because of what I do, you know, as part of my, you know, my fire service career with delivery training, but I find it, you know, it's one of the most, it's supposed to be the most controlled environment that we have at our disposal. Is delivering fire training. And yet, you know, so that's why it pains me so much when I read that a fire recruit lost their life, you know, doing this or doing that, you know, and ultimately, you know, in many instances, sometimes they're just tragic and they happen and it's unfortunate. But a lot of the times I think that when you start reading the after actions and you look at some of the reports that come out, there were probably things that could have been done that, you know, maybe the outcome would have been different. I'll just leave it at that. But I think knowing that kind of information ahead of time is going to make you, make us as a fire service safer. And then also it makes individually the instructor better at doing their job because it helps them to understand what they're getting themselves into and how to develop a program that's going to, not only get the material across the way that we all want it to be delivered, but we're going to do it in as safe and as efficient a manner as possible.
Yeah, when I was working on this grant, I actually reached out to NIOSH primarily because I wanted a better understanding of what types of training issues were impacting injuries and line of duty deaths. And, you know, lack of professional development, lack of training, lack of air management training, to be very specific, lack of Mayday training, lack of training on fire ground operations. I mean, those are the types of things that were coming out of these reports for injuries and line of duty deaths. And so, you know, they have a huge publication of their recommendations that came out of these as well. And so as we were discussing, would this be a value? It was very clear to see that it was being supported by recommendations coming out of NIOSH in terms of those injuries. And it was kind of a no-brainer, right?
So when we talk about that, we were talking about the NFPA 1400s and I'm sure, like you said, most of our eyes glaze over when we hear all the NFPA codes because it's just ridiculous. All the codes that are out there and us to try to figure these standards out, not codes, but standards, I should say. You might have heard one that was missing from that list that's pretty prominent for the fire instructor, and that's 1403. And so you're probably asking yourself, like, well, how did that get missed? And so ISFSI has a standalone NFPA 1403 program, and I would be remiss to not talk about it because my opinion, it's the top notch. I mean, if you're doing live fire training and you're an instructor, you know, we just talked about line of duty deaths on training events. We don't want to lose anybody in training. We don't want to lose anybody in the fire service, but losing somebody in training and then going and looking back and seeing that something wasn't conducted correctly, a fuel package wasn't set up right, walkthroughs weren't conducted, instructors weren't in the right positions. You know, you can't get that life back. And so, you know, I implore everyone that does live burns, you know, make sure that one, you're credentialed with the 1403 designation. And if you're not, you know, get yourself into one of our classes because, you know, I'm a biased opinion in my position, but we have the top-notch instructors teaching 1403 and they're teaching it from a perspective of safety as well as relevancy. And so, you know, you go through and you learn in that 3-day program and it's intense, you know, how to safely and effectively conduct live fire, the most IDLH environment we have in the fire service and training, how to do it safely and effectively. So that not only your students learn, but that they learn and they walk away. And, you know, we could read reports of buildings and things like that. So Lee can talk more about our 1403 program and how many instructors we've credentialed over the years and what that program looks like from a 3-day perspective. But that is the reason. So 1403 is not part of that grant just because there's no way we could squeeze that in 8 hours. It's a 3-day program for us. And so we talk about it in the program just to kind of tease everybody about like what we offer. But yeah, you know, we realize that it's a necessary thing for TASE instructors and we offer a standalone program for that.
Yeah. So we're teaching about 25 classes a year, about 25 students per class. So you can do the math on that. The numbers are fantastic. And, you know, I'm excited to say that Eric Dryman is one of our 2024 program grads. He literally just completed the program. So, Eric, why don't you tell us what you thought of the program? Because, you know, your listeners can hear it from our mouths, but you were a student.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I did recently attend the class that was held in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Had a very good time. Learned a lot. Reinforced. I tell people at this stage in my career, it's good. You know, a lot of the classes I take, because I've been doing this for as long as I have, I get a lot of positive reinforcement. It's like, oh, I am doing the right things. I have, you know, been at least trying to do the right thing. I don't, you know, we always miss something every once in a while and all that, but. So I got a lot of validation out of the way that I've developed programs that I've done over the years and some of the things that we've been fortunate enough to accomplish here in Indianapolis. And at the same time, I still walked away, even if, you know, 34 years of doing this job, 25 of those probably delivering training, you know, to walk away from the class, I still walked away and was like, man, I can't believe I never thought of that. Or I'm really glad that the instructor brought this up because, you know, that was something that we probably ought to change in our own programs or, you know, just the way that they did the burn plans and some of the fuel cell options that we were shown and the opportunities that for the less experienced instructors that were in the class to actually go through scenarios and be faced with a situation that you probably, you know, the first time you experience a student who has claustrophobia, which was one of the simulated scenarios, isn't as you're getting ready to crawl into an IDLH environment with that student. So having the ability to do some of those role-playing events during the class was, I think, very valuable to many of the students there who were probably newer to the fire instruction side of the job. I certainly learned a lot. I think it was certainly an eye-opening experience for me. Meeting the instructors, meeting the other students in the class, and having the opportunity to physically go through that program with as many live fire burns as I've done over my career prior to attending the class. As I said, a lot of validation, reinforcement, but at the same time, I still was able to pick up some things that I brought back to our training division here and made some suggestions about switching some things up. So kind of a long-winded, I guess, answer there, but that's what I took away from it. So
yeah, I mean, we're
very happy to have you.
We're honored to have some of the best instructors, both from inside the United States as well as from Canada, teaching this program for us. They're creative, they're innovative, they're constantly collaborating amongst each other to improve the program, and to your point, bring a fresh sense of content so that we can capture some of those things that even the most seasoned instructor who's been doing it for 30 plus years may not have thought of or could use to improve their own program. As Brian alluded to, it is a 3-day in-person delivery. There is pre-coursework associated with it. It's kind of that reverse classroom concept. It's intense. There is quite a bit of you know, if you're not willing to put in the energy to really make it a part of your life, it's probably not worth signing up to take. If anyone who wants to learn more about it, we have on our website, isfsi.org, the opportunity to learn more about it, to consider being a host site for it, or just pick up the phone and call us and let us answer your questions.
Yeah, I think that's key about the program is that, you know, people take training today and they're always looking for, you know, we talked about earlier, drinking from that fire hose. There's just so much out there that it's very hard for, you know, like I alluded to earlier, I went to the John Norman class and for 8 hours I'm writing because I never heard that, you know, it was before all this podcast technology and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're going to take a class, you're going to come to FDSC, you're going to go to, you know, a local conference, a regional delivery or something, you know, your expectations can't be that 4 hours of a class or an 8-hour delivery, it's going to be all new information just because it's hard to do. But what I tell people is that within that time, one, it's going to validate what you're probably already doing if you're engaged in the fire service, which if you're going to conferences and classes, you probably are. You're going to pick up a few nuggets that are something different that you might be able to implement. And then the other part of it is the network. You know, talk to the people in class when you're on a break or you're if you're taking this 3-day, 1403 class from ISFSI, those people are other instructors with likely, you know, towers in their area. So, hey, what tower do you have? How do you set your stuff up? What are you using for mannequins? What are you using for smoke machines? You know, how are you laying things out? What are you doing for burn plans? You know, ask the instructors and you create that network that is so valuable in the fire service of, you know, being able to pick up a phone and saying, hey, listen, I'm having this issue. And it might be a 1403 issue. It might be a personnel issue. But, you know, it's just that's what I think today when we do when I go to classes and, I try to go to classes when I can. One, to, you know, see what I learned, see what's going on in the fire service to make sure that I'm still on top of what the changes are. But really just to get that network built even stronger, but also validate what I'm doing, but also pick up a few nuggets when I can. And so I think if people go into it with that mindset when they attend a training class, I think you're going to find yourself, you know, on the other end of it much happier and much more productive.
Yeah, I would say that I agree with that, Brian. And I will say I'll go back to what Lee said about the pre-coursework and when I registered for this class, I got an email from Susan Campbell, I believe, that email came from, with the information that I needed to complete in the pre-coursework, and then after the first day, the instructors, said, well, there's homework. And I'm like, what do you mean there's home? I'm thinking to myself, what do you mean there's homework? So and it was a good thing. But my point is that these are legit programs. They're not, you're not just going to roll in and sit in front of a guy lecturing on, you know, in front of a PowerPoint presentation for 8 hours. And then that'd be the end of it. There's, you know, there's a lot of meat on that bone, I guess is one way to put it. So, you know, it is a investment of time, but it's well worth the time. So, and you mentioned you both mentioned the 1400 program. Is it a similar format? I know it's only one day, but is there pre-course work that goes along with that? Those sorts of things, or how is it laid out compared to some of the other programs that you deliver?
Yeah. So this is, you know, obviously our 1403 is a credential designation. The 1400 is more of an open source, self-learning, self-paced. So the online course is really a standalone, right? So as Brian alluded, 25 courses is what's funded through the grant. Those will be, they have not been identified yet. Those applications are still coming in as of this week. And to his point, we can only accept up to a certain number of students in those classes. So 40 students is where we reach max capacity. It's free because it's grant funded. And so a lot of times we have a lot more demand than we do have the ability to safely teach in person. But that online, it will be open source and available during the grant period of performance, post-grant period of performance. It will have longevity. The ISFSI will maintain it, will make sure that it's current and valid and updated if any changes come to that 1400. You know, we know standards oftentimes change. And so we will be publishing online where those other 25 in-person deliveries will be. And, you know, you'll work directly with the host site to get your registrations through them. Again, they'll all be free of charge, no cost to attend. And we have 25 amazing instructors that will be teaching on our behalf. They'll be going through their own train the trainer in September. And then you'll see those classes delivered between October and August of 2025.
Be a busy time for us.
Yeah, that's important. Absolutely. And for people that may be interested in reaching out to you to be a host, what's that process look like? Is there a deadline to apply, or is that deadline already passed? I don't recall. I know I got the email and I looked at it. Of course, I passed it along to some of the folks that I connected with here in Indiana. But yep. So just talk a little bit about that.
So we did an online delivery. We did an online request for the ability to host, was asking the important questions, which is, you know, their ability to be able to have the registrations processed through them, being able to open it up outside their own department. We don't want to work with departments that, you know, physically will not allow outside instructors to come in and be a part of those programs. And so we opened it up to our membership base, as well as through NAFTD. We have a great relationship with NAFTD, and those are primarily your state training agencies. And they have such a fantastic span across the state of departments that they can work with, not outside of their own instructor base. So the deadline for that is the 19th of this month when we close that out, and we'll be making our selection process. We've had a fantastic response so far, but if anyone is interested in making those, submitting their request to host, they can send me an email and I'll send them the long drawn out link of where to do that. But my email is leigh.hubbard@isfsi.org. So leigh.hubbard@isfsi.org.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. Brian, did you have anything else you wanted to add to that? Or
no, I'm just really excited. Like I said, you know, Lee kind of alluded to it. It's going to be a busy year. 25 deliveries in 12 months is, you know, logistically a lot, but we're committed to getting it done. And I think when you start seeing this hands-on roll out, you definitely, if it's in your area or within a drivable distance for you to travel, I would highly encourage you to jump on it. And I also would say this too about this is that you do not have to be an ISFSI member to attend. So If you're kind of, you know, like, hey, you see it's offered locally, but you're like, I can't sign up because I'm not a member, you know, sign up, come check it out and talk to the instructors. All of our instructors are members. And ask those instructors the questions like, hey, why did you join? What opportunities are there? And, you know, I'm from the show me state, Missouri. So you got to prove it to me. And so, you know, let us prove it to you, prove it, you know, come to this class and let us prove why, you know, an ISOSI membership is valuable.
All right. Thank you. So we've talked about the past. We've talked about the current. Let's talk about the future. What are your, some things that you see for the, not only for the, for ISFSI, but for the American Fire Service from an instruction standpoint that, you either are either excited about or you think are some opportunities to expand or improve the way we deliver training to other firefighters, whether it's a classroom setting or hands-on, you know, things like virtual reality or you know, some of these other technological advantages or advances that we're seeing. You know, is it PPE? Is it different burn buildings? You know, whatever it is, what are some things that either of you think, you know, are going to be the hot topic or things that we need to pursue coming up in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, you talked a little bit about virtual reality. So we're certainly keeping our eye on that. Some of it is evolving pretty quickly and some of it seems to be perhaps not quite there yet, but you're seeing groups, you know, develop safe training opportunities. An example would be like Lion and their digital training props. So we've been able to use some of those in our own training and continue to watch what's evolving with that. So, and as we gain more knowledge, we'll be disseminating that information primarily to our membership and what we can release open source, we certainly will. You know, I would say that, because of the virtual nature of how we're at training, there's still something that we get when we train in person together. And, you know, Eric, you said it was getting to know the instructors and getting to know the other students, people you would not have even met in a million years had you not been a part of that 25 student cadre. You know, here's a little plot twist. You're going to see ISFSI go back to doing at least one in-person instructor professional development conference, small conference that is going to be, you know, focused on what we're really good at, which is instructor professional development. And that was a part that came out of our strategic planning initiative that we did this past fall. Brian, you probably have on that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brian.
No, I'm excited about a potential fall conference in 25, bringing that back to reality, and you know, location to be determined. But you know, in terms of the training and you know, the challenges we're going to face going forward, I think it's a challenge, but an opportunity. Is we hear a lot about today's generations, and you know, all they do is look at their phone and their iPad or whatever that is, the tablet device. And so, I think virtual reality, artificial intelligence, all those things are going to come into play. And who are the people that are, you know, on that? That's the younger generation. And so they're going to need to connect with the older generation who has the experience to say, hey, listen, when you're going to make that video and you want me to put these goggles on and hold this, you know, stick that's supposed to be a nozzle. Well, hey, kid, your smoke's not right. Or, hey, kid, your fire's not right. So I think with that challenge comes an opportunity. And I think that we, you know, and I say older because I'm at that point, like in the middle of my career, I got 24 years in, I got, I think, 10 or 15 years left. And so I feel like I'm not the old guy, but I'm not the young guy anymore. And so I feel like, you know, we have to be to adapt to that because it's coming. And, you know, if we don't try to meet this generation somewhere where their comfort level's at, we're going to fail ourselves and fail the fire service. And so I think that's the way of the future. I think mandates are going to come down for safer training. I know that I'll probably get, you know, tons of emails and calls after this, like, how dare you say safer training? Our training's safe. Totally agree. You know, we're doing the best we can with a safer training. But as we alluded to earlier, when you have line of duty deaths in training environments, it's not going to take long for someone to say, could you do it more effective? What objective was met that couldn't have been done in a different manner? And when you don't have an objective that could be met and you say, well, you know, our objective was for them to feel heat, And, you know, a lawyer says, well, open an oven and it's a lot safer, and that's heat. And I know it's terrible to say that, right? Like, trust me, I love live fire just as much as the next guy going and doing those trainings. But, you know, we also have to understand the world and the environment we're in. And I think that that technology that's changing every day around us is really going to change the future of training for the fire service.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think from a safety perspective, it's important to look at other opportunities that may come down the, you know, come to us in the future. But even from a financial perspective, I know from my time in the training division, particularly during COVID, you know, we went from $10 or $11 for a sheet of OSB to like $50 for a sheet of OSB. And at some point, you know, and we all, you know, we're all living it every day, you know, the cost of things is going up, and it seems to a certain degree like the cost of things that we use in the fire service is going up even more, which is debate for another day. But at the same time, you know, safety is paramount, but the financial cost and the outlay and the time commitments and the logistics of these things is not an easy lift either, particularly if you're trying to organize a large scale program for an agency or for a state or whatever it is. So, you know, having those different opportunities, different resources available, different programs that get developed, you know, this smarter way of doing business, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it. I think we're all looking for that. You know, I echo Brian's sentiment. You know, there's nothing better than actually putting people in those, you know, as realistic as we can make them, those, you know, those live fire situations to expose them to that. But, you know, if there are ways to do that safer and more efficiently and effectively, then I think we owe it to ourselves, not only as individuals, but as a large swath of the American population to do those things. So, coming up on about an hour here. So, we're going to kind of start winding things down. If people want to get involved, how do they get involved with ISFSI? Lee?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously the backbone of ISFSI is the engagement of our members. So pick up the phone and call us and say you want to get involved. Also, don't be shy. You know, it's, we are kind of the stepping stone for a lot of people who want to try out their content or want to get good, healthy feedback on their content. We have a fantastic social community site. Eric, I know you've responded to things on there and you've watched some of the conversations unfold. Put your stuff out there. If you want to get involved in a committee, we can certainly place you on some committee responsibilities. If you want to improve your writing and you want to get some articles published, we can assist with that. We're always looking for people to help with that. You know, if you want to be a mentor or a mentee, what a great way to start, right? Just to say, you know, Eric may say, hey, guys, I've been in the fire service 30 plus years. However, I really want to improve my capacity in X, Y, and Z. Get on that platform and let's hook you up with someone who can assist with making that happen, or at least provide you some, you know, ways to improve that. So it all starts with you raising your hand. If you don't raise your hand, we don't know that you want to get involved, but we rely very heavily on our members.
Yeah. You've got a website, right? You can go to isfsi.org.
Yep.
Right. It is a .org, right?
It is.
So, you know, yeah. So, you know, you can go on there and poke around and feel around and look at things and get more information. And like, you know, I can tell you that anytime I've called or emailed the ISFSI for anything, if the individual doesn't pick up the phone when I call, if I leave them a message or I text them, they call me back, or if I email them, you know, very responsive, which is great, because in this day and age, that's not always the case with a lot of, you know, our electronic communications. You don't get that response, or you wonder if they got your email or, you know, whatever. But I've never had any of those bad experiences, I guess, with the folks that are doing this, running this organization day in and day out, which is, I think, commendable to you guys as well, because we're all busy. Brian, did you have something? I think I might have cut you off. Did you have something you were going to say?
No, I was just echoing Lee's statements. You know, it's a member-driven organization. And, you know, I guess as we wrap up, I'd end with this thought from me is that, you know, the fire service is just what you make of it. And so, you know, if you just go through your career, you know, like I said, I've got 24 years in and still going. But, you know, Eric, you're saying 30 plus years in the fire service. And, you know, I talk to people all the time that literally tell me, they're like, man, my career's over and I didn't realize it. And so the last thing you want to do in the fire service is look back over your career and say, I wish I would have had I done this, or could I have if I only put myself out there. And so, you know, challenge yourself as a fire service professional, career volunteer. It does not matter. If you're in the fire service, you're a professional firefighter, and that's the expectation. And so put yourself out there, and that's what the ISFSI can do, is it can open those doors and afford you those opportunities, get you with the people. If you've ever wanted to write an article, you know, I helped somebody write an article last year, and he's like, I could never get published. And I'm like, why not? He's like, oh, nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Why don't they? And so it's just taking that little bit of a push. And we have 2,000 members that like to push. I can attest to the phone calls. It just takes a little push, and you would be surprised. I think people would be very surprised if you put themselves out there and get involved in a little bit extra from the fire service, not just their fire department, but the fire service, what doors and what opportunities they'll find themselves afforded.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much to both of you. Appreciated the conversation. The hour went by pretty quick for me. Hopefully it did for you as well. But just as we wrap up, you got either one of you have any final thoughts before we close up the podcast for the day?
I would only say, you know, my recommendation to anyone listening is to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening in DC, particularly if you're in the American Fire Service. We have some great professionals out there who are representing your interests, but we need you to be responsive and be involved. So we didn't really talk a lot about, you know, grassroots and legislative advocacy, but that is a part of your responsibility in your profession. So pay attention. If you don't think it's your problem, you're missing the boat, because it's all of our problems. The second thing I would say is, you know, membership dues are $135 a year, and I can 100% guarantee you that you will get the return on investment way beyond $135. And, you know, if funding is an issue for you, if funding is a problem for you, send me an email and let's talk about some of the things that we can do to continue to help you and support you if that is problematic, because we never want someone's financial situation to be what impacts them to getting the help they need in their department to ensure that they have safe and reliable training. And the last thing I would say is just keep your eyes peeled for where we're going to be, what we're doing, and our programs and events. And we would love to have you as a student, if nothing else.
Thank you. Brian, did you have any final thoughts?
No, I just echo what I said earlier. And, you know, I appreciate the time today to discuss ISFSI fire service training. It's my passion. You know, training is what makes us better. In my opinion, it's second to responses in terms of priorities for our fire department. And so, you know, having that ISFSI support ensures that our training is, you know, safe, effective, and efficient, and that we're putting the best product out there for our people when the community needs us most. And that's during that 911 call. So. But thanks for the opportunity to be here today, and looking forward to it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it too. All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in this month for Hooks and Hoses. This is Eric Dryman signing off, and we'll see you in August. Everybody have a good month. Take care.
This episode of Fire Engineering Podcast is sponsored by LogRx, providing real-time accountability of all your narcotics from cradle to grave. Coming soon, LogRx will also track medical supplies, equipment, PPE, and even vehicle checks. Learn a better way to track your narcotics at LogRx.com. That's LogRx.com.
Like a trusted turnout jacket you've had for years, Flex 7 outer shell fabric delivers a perfectly broken-in feel on the very first wear. Flexible, comfortable, and powered with the strength of Enforce technology, Flex 7 outer shell fabric is made to move. To learn more, visit TenkataFabrics.com/Flex7. Flex 7, powered by Enforce technology, only from Tenkata Protective Fabrics.